Well, good morning. It is great to be with all of you today. We are in the middle of a sermon series that we have called He Gave Us Stories. And we named it that to highlight the fact that our God and Maker created human beings in such a way that we use stories to help us make sense of the world around us, to help us meet the demands of reality with loving confidence. So we find that about 40% of our Bible is actually stories. It's all narratives. Stories about God and about us and how to meet the realities of life. The Bible tells us through these stories that we can meet whatever comes our way with poise and with humility and with hope, because of who God is and what He is doing in our world. And so today we're going to be talking about a reality that all of us face, that none of us can get away from. It's not death or taxes, but it's as real as that. It's something that we all face. Sometimes we see it as a good thing. Sometimes we see it as a bad thing. But it's a thing that is part of all of our lives. We're going to talk today about transitions. Everybody's familiar with transitions, right? Yes, you know what I mean, right? So something significant changes, and you have to transition into not just a new situation, but sometimes a new reality. Something huge happens, and things shift. Has this happened to everyone? Yes, y'all know what I'm talking about. Make sure you're awake. Yeah, feedback. Okay, good. All right. So some of those transitions into a new reality are ones that we choose, right? We choose to take that job or not. We choose to marry this person or not. But sometimes there's transitions we don't choose. There's a new reality. Parent comes and says, I'm getting remarried. Okay. Child comes to you. You're going to be a grandparent. Oh, okay, good. You wake up in the morning, new elected official. You didn't choose. Wake up, it's a new morning. You know, or maybe it's one you did choose. But things happen. Sometimes they happen quickly. Sometimes they happen slowly. But transitions are a reality of life. And they are nearly always difficult. Even when it's a transition into something good, they're still difficult, not only because something significant has changed and there's a loss that happens, but also because there's an unknown. You're entering into a reality you've never known before and you aren't quite sure how it goes. So even if it's good, it's difficult. Earlier this year, when our daughter Janelle married our friend Stephen, we were at the rehearsal dinner and my husband John was sharing. And he's talking about how much he loves Stephen and how much it's good and it's right that they're getting married. And he's pro this marriage. And yet at the same time, he starts crying. He starts tearing up. And he starts talking about Janelle and how Janelle was the one person who would drop anything she could to travel with him. Anything she could to go skiing or to go fishing. And he's talking about how starting the next day, that all changes. Because there's this place that he held in Janelle's life that is now going to be occupied by Stephen. And it's good. God says, a man shall leave his wife. Or sorry, not leave his wife. Leave your wife. No. Well, leave your parents and cling to your wife, right? So it's a good thing. It was a good thing that Janelle was leaving. But it was a hard thing. And John didn't know if her future would be better with Stephen than it was with him. So even good transitions are difficult. That's how the world is. Change is hard. Transitioning to new realities are dicey. And the Bible affirms that truth. There are so many stories in the Bible about transitions that surround change, surrounding how to do change well. And today's story is one of those stories. It's in the line of transition stories like those in Genesis, where the blessing that God gave to Abraham's family goes from one generation to the next. And they have this blessing where God says, I'm going to use you to change all that is wrong in the world. Through your family, I'm going to make right all that is wrong. It's known as the blessing. And so from generation to generation, this blessing is supposed to be passed. But every time it goes to a new generation, there's tension that happens. Because is the new heir going to care about the blessing? And so you get these stories when Abraham has the blessing, but he's giving it to his son Isaac. And so everybody gets nervous. What's Isaac going to do with the blessing? Is he going to care about the blessing? Yes, Isaac cares. That's great. Okay, but now Isaac's about to die. And now the blessing's going to be transitioned to his son, Esau. He's the eldest son. Does he care about the blessing? No. He sells off his blessing for some fast food one day. Oh my gosh, he doesn't care about the blessing. What happens? The blessing goes to Jacob. The blessing's in the hands of this manipulous, deceitful, bad brother. What's going to happen to the blessing? All these transitions. But then we get these stories about how God works in Jacob's life. And he preserves and he protects the blessing. And it goes from Jacob down to his 12 sons. And then you get the 12 sons who become the nation Israel. And so Israel is now governed under the leadership of Moses. And under Moses, God teaches them how to be a community of this blessing, through whom all that's wrong with the world will be made right. To live as a community that cares more about the world's needs than their own needs. And so Moses does this. But now Moses is going to die. Oh my gosh, what's going to happen to the blessing now? Transitions to Joshua. How does Joshua do? Joshua does great. Okay, so the blessing, it's going strong, but now Joshua's about to die. Oh my gosh, what's going to happen? It goes bad. It goes really bad. There's discord and there's evil, and Israel becomes as bad and corrupt as all the people around them. All the people who haven't inherited the blessing all look the same. Israel looks the same as then. So what's going to happen? Is the blessing gone? Is God still protecting the blessing? How can faithfulness come out of this trashy, corrupt Israel that the people have become? And then we get these stories. King David rises up. And David cares about the blessing. When it says that David was a man after God's own heart, it was a man after God's reputation, about blessing the world, caring more about what the world needs than what he needs. And so you get faithfulness in David, but then David's about to die. What's going to happen to the blessing? It's going to pass to his sons. Will his sons care about the blessing? He goes down to Solomon, and it goes down to the other kings. And we have these unfaithful, randomly faithful, but unfaithful kings who don't care about the blessing. So is the blessing going to die out? No, we have Elijah. And Elijah cares about the blessing. And so he calls the kings. You need to be faithful to the blessing. And you get Elijah and a line of prophets who do these messages from the Lord year after year, calling the kings back to the blessing, back to their original call of who they are and how they're to be in the world. To care about other people more than themselves. To care about honoring God's name more than making a name for themselves. But now, today's story, Elijah is leaving. And so what is going to happen? Will the Baals win? Will the worship of Yahweh fall out? Or will the blessing be preserved? So today's story is about that transition. And it's one of those stories where it references a lot of Bible places, a lot of biblical themes and events that happen. And we readers who are thousands of miles away and thousands of years away from this can struggle to really gather the richness of what's going on in this story. So I'm giving you fair warning. You think I've already done it. I am a Bible geek, and I'm going to completely geek out on you today. And you think you just got a little bit of it, but it's going to keep going. So hopefully you will like this. But I love this stuff. And so we're going to read the story, and I'm going to come back, and we're going to kind of explain what's happening. So here's our story from today. It's from 2 Kings 2. Now when the Lord was about to take Elijah up to heaven by a whirlwind, Elijah and Elisha were on their way from Gilgal. And Elijah said to Elisha, "Please stay here, for the Lord has sent me as far as Bethel." But Elisha said, "As the Lord lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you." So they went down to Bethel. And the sons of the prophets who were in Bethel came out to Elisha. And they said to him, "Do you know that today the Lord will take away your master from over you?" And he said, "Yes, I know it. Keep quiet." Elijah said to him, "Elisha, please stay here, for the Lord has sent me to Jericho." But he said, "As the Lord lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you." So they came to Jericho. The sons of the prophets who were at Jericho drew near to Elisha, and they said to him, "Do you know that today the Lord will take your master from over you?" And he said, "Yes, I know. Keep quiet." Then Elijah said to him, "Please stay here, for the Lord has sent me to the Jordan." But he said, "As the Lord lives and as you yourself live, I will not leave you." So the two of them went on. 50 men of the sons of prophets also went, and they stood at some distance from them. Did I skip a part? Are we good? No? Sorry. Okay. All these J's and E's are messing me up. All right. So 50 of the sons of prophets also went and stood at some distance from them as they were both standing by the Jordan. Then Elijah took his cloak, rolled it up, and struck the water. And the water was parted to one side and to the other till the two of them could go over on dry ground. And when they had crossed, Elijah said to Elisha, "Ask what I shall do for you, for I am taken from you." And Elisha said, "Please, let there be a double portion of your spirit on me." And he said, "You have asked a hard thing. Yet, if you see me as I am being taken from you, it shall be so for you. But if you do not see me, it shall not be so." And as they went on and talked, behold, chariots of fire and horses of fire separated the two of them. And Elijah went up by a whirlwind into heaven. And Elisha saw it, and he cried, my father, the chariots of Israel and its horsemen." And he saw him no more. Then he took hold of his own clothes and tore them in two pieces. And he took up the cloak of Elijah that had fallen from him and went back and stood on the bank of the Jordan. Then he took the cloak of Elijah that had fallen from him and struck the water, saying, "Where is the Lord, the God of Elijah?" And when he had struck the water was parted to the one side and to the other, and Elisha went over. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. So, in this story, Elijah travels into a whirlwind, okay? And the author travels the reader through important locations and characters and events in Israel's history. So in this way, what's happening is the author is not only reminding us of what happened, it's reminding us of who God is in the lives of his people. He's reminding the readers that can, in any transition, they can have humble confidence because the unchanging element of God always remains. That no matter how many things change, God's presence and God's purposes remain. So I have a few maps to help with that. So, okay, our first map. So this is the promised land. Okay, so the land that God gave Israel to be the nation from which knowledge of the one true triune God would reside and would go out and spread out into the world in order to wrong all that is right in all of the world. So this is the promised land. And you'll see I've marked here for us the Jordan River. Now the Jordan River, from the river to the west, was supposed to be the promised land. So that was this boundary. But over the years, when they're heading there, the tribes of Manasseh and Gad and Reuben asked if they could stay on the east side of the Jordan. So that's why it's on both sides. But the Jordan River, when you hear that, we're going to talk about, you're to think of certain things. So there's where the Jordan is in the promised land. Lots of encounters happen in this land over the years, encounters that are so significant that when you hear a town mentioned, you just don't think of that physical location. You think of who God was, to his people in that place, right? So you hear a town and you go, "Oh, this is what happened there. This is what we learned about us and about God there." So for instance, the first place that was mentioned is Gilgal. Okay, so there's your Jordan River to kind of orient you to the previous picture. So in the Bible, there's a few towns named Gilgal, but The name itself, when you heard of Gilgal, you would remember when Joshua was about to enter the promised land, all of Israel camped together in Gilgal, and God purified and protected and provided for Israel in that place. So just to hear the word Gilgal reminds us that we have a God who purifies, who protects, and who provides for his people as they go out to seek to be the blessing they were made to be, right? So Gilgal, purify, protect, provide as we go and live out into the blessing. And from Gilgal, they go to Bethel. Bethel means the house of God. In Genesis 12, God meets Abraham in Bethel. In Genesis 28, Bethel is where Jacob sees the angels ascending and descending from heaven. Some of you remember that story? That happened in Bethel. So you mention Bethel and you think this is the place where the heavenly realm or the heavenly space and the earthly space that exists, the gap between them is very thin in Bethel. And so Bethel reminds us that our God is a God who wants to be with us, who wants to be close to his people and is working out that blessing so he can be close to us. In the blessing, he's working to reunite the heavens and the earth. And then from Bethel, they go to Jericho. So Jericho is the place of Joshua's first great victory. It's the battle where Israel does nothing but play music. And they win, right? So the walls come tumbling down, and all they have to do is go in. And so the word Jericho is supposed to remind us that our God battles for us. He battles against all that is wrong in the world, often in ways we would never expect, in order to keep the blessing going. So you have Gilgal and Bethel and Jericho, and then you come to the Jordan. So the Jordan River, the border of the Promised Land, this is the boundary that Moses was not allowed to cross. It's the place where the mantle of leadership of Israel passes from Moses to Joshua. And it's in the mountain range along the eastern side of the Jordan River that Moses goes into, and that's where he dies in Mount Nebo, but his bones are never found. And this is the mountain range that Elijah gets swept up into heaven is, where people go and look and can't find him. So the Jordan River is supposed to remind us of the boundaries of life and death. So you get all these physical locations to relive the history of God and his people. How through multiple generations, we have a God who doesn't change. God's presence and God's purposes are here today like they were back then. But it's not just the locations in this story that remind us of that. There's people and there's events. You get this group, this sons of prophets. Who are these people? The sons of the prophets are this loosely organized community of men who were called out to be prophets. They probably began around the time of Samuel. We don't hear of them again, really, after the time of Elisha. But these are people who care a lot about the blessing. They care a lot about the corrupt leadership of the kings. And so they are very supportive of Elijah and his ministry. And it's interesting because these sons of the prophets are given insight into what's about to happen, into the fact that Elijah's not going to die. He's just going to be taken up. And they keep having this concern for Elijah. Hey, Elijah, did you know this is happening? Yes, I know this is happening. Right? So they're given insight because the story is going to affirm for them. It's going to assure them that the God of the blessing will remain, that they need not worry. So you get the sons of the prophet. And then, of course, you get this guy, Elisha. We haven't talked about Elisha yet. Elisha shows up in 1 Kings 19, and he is a gift from God to Elijah. When Elijah's plans have fallen through and he thinks there's no hope for the world and he goes into a deep depression, God gives him many things. And one of the things that God gives him is Elisha, a companion and a friend to walk forward with him. And many of you have had that experience, right? Where God has put someone in your life during a certain season of your life to really walk through that time with you. And so you know what that's like. So we have God giving Elisha to Elijah, not only to be a friend, but to be one who will continue on his ministry. So by the time this story happens, they've been doing life together for a while. And you can see that Elisha has become very attached to Elijah. At each point along the way of this difficult journey, where Elisha's having to continue to walk and think about, I'm about to lose a friend. I'm about to lose a friend. I'm about to lose my mentor. And it's hard for him. And Elijah gives him permission to not have to do the journey, right? But every time Elisha says, I will not leave you. And that's supposed to remind us of another story. The story of Ruth and Naomi, right? Where Naomi gives Ruth opportunity to leave and not go back into the land of blessing. But she chooses to stay. And from there, Ruth marries Boaz, right? So they go back into this world of corruption, a world that is not honoring of God. And Ruth sticks with Naomi, and through that sticking, marries Boaz. And then 10 generations later, they become the great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandparents of King David. Right? So we're supposed to remember this and the faithfulness. And those of you who have had that kind of friendship can relate to that. Someone's leaving and your heart is breaking. But at the same time that your heart is breaking, you know there's a future that you need to attend to. And so Elisha, in the midst of all that is going on this journey, is having people say to him, hey, do you know what's about to happen? You're about to lose your friend. Hey, do you know? You know, and I don't know what was going on totally with Elisha, but I picture this, whether he's trying to get them to not mention it because Elijah doesn't want to think about it, or he doesn't want to think about it. He's like, I know. Be quiet. I don't want to think about it. I'm about to lose this friend. But not only going to lose this friend, if things go as I hope, I'm going to inherit his ministry. And that's a lot of pressure. Elijah had these huge shoes to fill. So you're thinking, I'm grieving this loss. And I'm also wondering if I'm going to have what it takes to move everyone into the future. So Elijah's got all this stuff going on in him. And his friend is going away. And they get to the Jordan River. And this interesting thing happens. So Elijah takes off his cloak. His cloak was the mantle of his leadership of the prophets. And he rolls it up. And just as Moses took his staff, that was this mantle, the symbol of leadership of Moses, and Moses struck the waters, and what happened to the waters? They parted, right? So Elijah takes his cloak and he strikes the water and the seas part and Elijah and Elisha walk across on dry ground. Moses and Elijah. But that's not the only allusion to Moses. I told you I'm geeking out on this stuff. So they get to the other side, and as there have been in so many previous stories, when you read through scripture, when someone's about to die, they go to the next people and go, "What? You know, there's a blessing that happens, right? What do you want me to do for you?" And so Elijah turns to Elisha and says, "What would you like me to do for you?" And Elisha asks to be treated as a firstborn son. He says, "I would like a double portion of your spirit." Now, in that, he's not saying, "I want twice as much of God as you had." The double portion is an idiom for receiving the firstborn son's inheritance. So basically he's saying, I want divine empowerment to carry on what you were doing. So as a firstborn son would receive everything needed to keep on his father's work. So Elisha's saying, I would like to be able to have the divine empowerment to carry forth the work we've been doing. To continue to call Israel's kings to faithfulness to the blessing that Israel was to be. Now, of course, that's not in Elijah's control, right? Only God can give the gift of his spirit. No one can earn it. No person can give it. Only God can give his spirit. So Elijah does what Elijah has done his whole ministry. He points away from himself to God, right? He says, if God shows me being taken away from you, then he's given it to you. But if he doesn't show you, he hasn't given it to you. Oh, it's not about me, Elisha. It's about God. And then they keep walking. So they're talking and they're walking, and then suddenly these chariots and horses of fire come between the two of them. And chariots and horses were symbols of God's protection of Israel, that he promised he would always be with Israel. He says in Deuteronomy 33, there is none like God, O Yeshurun. That's a nickname for Israel. It's like when you call John Johnny. Okay, so Yeshurun, God who rides through the heavens to your help, through the skies in his majesty. So Elisha sees Elijah swept up into the winds of heaven. And with his heart breaking, he cries out, "My father, my father! The chariots and the horsemen of Israel!" And Elijah is no more. And in an expression of grief that shows the breaking of his heart, he tears his clothes in two. But then he picks up Elijah's cloak, a cloak that had fallen, the text tells us twice. And he goes back to the Jordan River. And he stands on the border. And he wonders, has his asked for blessing been granted? He saw Elijah go. So does that mean he's been given this divine empowerment? Could it mean he has it? Might it mean? And you can feel the trepidation of, oh, I want to hit the water, but I don't want to hit the water. Have you been those places in your life? I want to hit it and think God's there, but what if I hit it and he's not there? And then what? And he just, oh, what's going on inside him? But he takes the cloak, the mantle of leadership of the prophets, to call out the kings to live in blessing, and he strikes it. And we remember when God went to Joshua after Moses died, and he said, "Moses, my servant, is dead. Get ready and cross the Jordan River." And here's Elijah standing. He slaps the water with the cloak. God saying, "Get ready," because the water parts and he crosses the Jordan River. Transition has happened. Elisha is commissioned to continue this unfinished task of calling people to the blessing they were made for. And the next story is about how those sons of the prophets go out and they search for Elijah, and Elijah's gone. But we don't hear about Elijah again. Except in reference to the coming of the Messiah. The transition of leadership that all of Israel was longing for. The transition of leadership that hadn't happened since the time of David, since Moses, since Abraham. A transition into the Messiah that would make all things different. He would come in faithfulness. And it would change everything. And it was prophesied that the Elijah figure would come. And he would make sure people knew it. He would prepare and he would point the way to this transition of leadership. And in Matthew 11, Messiah Jesus says, John the Baptist was the promised Elijah. John the Baptist, who pointed away from himself to God, who was all about Israel having the restoration of the blessing through a faithful king, through the promised Messiah king. John the Baptist, who pointed to Jesus, who was the living Gilgal. He was the one, through his perfect life and sacrificing, atoning death, Jesus purified and protected and provided for humanity so that we could return to relationship with our triune maker and be the blessing that we are made to be. Jesus, who was Bethel, he was the house of God, where God and humanity, the heavenly and the earthly realms, meet. Jesus was the living Jericho, where God battled corruption and evil on the behalf of humanity to free us from sin, to free us from the lies of the world that ensnare us. Jesus, who brought down the walls of hostility, brought down the ultimate forces of evil with his sacrificial love. Jesus, who crossed the boundaries of the Jordan between life and death, whose resurrection conquered death and became the first fruits of a new humanity, A humanity who would be able to live in the heavenly and the earthly realm at the same time. Jesus does all of this. Did I tell you I was going to geek out on you? This is amazing, right? Jesus does all of these things. He's faithful to the blessing. He lives. He is the blessing. But he didn't end the transitions. Just as God, through the provision of his Spirit, transitioned blessings throughout the generations, throughout the history of his people, to keep moving towards that final day when all the failures are rectified and the world is as it was meant to be, so Jesus gives his Spirit. He empowers us, his followers, to carry forth the blessing. He transitions by empowering us to be a community of people through time and through space who gather together to look at Jesus. And we see Jesus looking back at us and saying, here's how you be the blessing. And here's my Spirit given to you. Friends, we are Elisha. We are the transitions when we can smack the water and walk through on dry ground because of what Jesus has done. And you know what Jesus says in Matthew 16 about this community? Not even the gates of hell can stop us. Those of us who love Jesus, we are the Elishas of today. Because of Jesus, we've seen into the realities of the heavens and the earth. We've been empowered by God to live into the blessing we already are and to spread that blessing through a love that faces the demands of the world with the courage of Christ and the spirit of self-sacrifice. We are empowered to be communities of people who care about the needs of the world more than we care about our own needs. By being people who battle the corruption with loving self-sacrifice, providing and protecting for the people who are lost and the people who are disregarded as unimportant. We're to be the thin place between heaven and earth. And we're to anticipate the day that we too are going to live with resurrection bodies and to be able to inhabit heaven and earth at the same time. And one of the places that we get to live into being that reality, to live into being the blessing that we are called and gifted to be, is when transitions happen in our life. By being people who do transitions well, because we know that as much as our lives are going to be full of a shifting sense of one reality to the next reality, we can know that the God of each new reality never changes. As much as our lives are going to have people coming into it and going out of it, God will never go away. When a leader we love goes away, we grieve, but we don't give up because our hope didn't rest in that leader. Our hope rests in the God of that leader. And so whether our leader is a parent or a grandparent, a pastor or a professor, an elected official or a beloved boss, what we don't need is for that person who's left to come back. What we don't need is for God to recycle the past, but we need God to keep being in the present like he was in the past. We need to remember, as one person put it, when God's leader is removed, everything of God remains. Or as how I like to think of it, when we have Jesus, we may not have all we want, but we have all we need. We may not have all we want, but we have all we need. We may not have all we want. We don't have a child we wanted to be in our life. We don't want to be divorced. We don't want to live with cancer. We might not have all we want, but we have all we need. And transitions are opportunities to live into that truth. That the future is secure because God is in the future. So parents, raise your hand if you're a parent. Are you a parent? I thought we had lots of parents. Parents, either you know this or you're about to know this. But your children are transitioning. They're transitioning into making their own decisions. And before you know it, they transition to living not with you. Are you teaching them more than what it looks like to go to church? Are you teaching them what it means to depend on the God who will be there for them when you aren't? Bible study leaders, Sunday school leaders, are you pointing your students to Jesus? Are you equipping them so that when change happens, their first thought is to call Jesus, not to call you? Life group and fellowship leaders, are you building communities centered around Jesus so that when something happens and someone in your community feels like all is lost, feels like their life is over, do they have a community around them to hold them up and to love on them and to cry with them and to tear their clothes with them? And also to remind them in Jesus Christ, all is never lost and life is never over. It's different, absolutely, but it's not over. Friends, this is the blessing that we have. This is the blessing we get to extend out into the world, wherever we go, that God can be trusted. He will not fail us. His presence and his purposes remain. Earthly realities will change, but eternal realities will not. And when you have Jesus, you may not have all you want, but you do have all you need. Let's pray. Oh, Lord, I love your Bible. I am just amazed by how you've worked through thousands of years of history and compiling of all these stories, all so that we can love you more, all so that we can reach out to people who don't have people loving on them, and we can love on them in a way that is healthy and is good and is life-restoring. Lord, thank you for being the God that you are and no other. Thank you that even though we may not have all we want today, one day our hearts will not only be full, but they will be overflowing. And until then, they can overflow because we trust you. You are enough. You are all that we need. In your name we praise you. Amen.
With clearer, brighter vision. In his cross my trust shall be. Take this world and give me Jesus. Till that day, my Lord, I see. Take this world and give me Jesus. In his cross my trust shall be. Take this world and give me Jesus. Till that day, my Lord, I see. Oh, the height and depth of mercy. Oh, the length and breadth of love. Oh, the fullness of redemption. Pledge of heaven.